What would you sacrifice to save humanity? Your childhood? Your innocence? Your soul? In a future where Earth faces extinction from an alien threat, military leaders make a chilling calculation. Only children possess the mental flexibility needed to defeat an enemy that thinks in ways adults cannot comprehend. They identify 6-year-old Andrew Ender Wiggin as their best hope, a boy whose genius for strategy matches his capacity for empathy, making him the perfect weapon. But weapons don't ask questions about what they're aimed at. They simply fire when triggered. The story opens with violence and its aftermath. Ender's government-mandated monitoring device has just been removed, marking him as a failed experiment. At school, bullies corner him, mocking his status as an illegal third child in a society that limits families to 2 offspring. When they attack, Ender doesn't just defend himself, he calculates. He beats the lead bully, Stilson, so severely that no one will dare touch him again. Walking away, he weeps, terrified by his own brutality. "I am just like Peter," he thinks, referring to his sadistic older brother. Yet this very combination, Peter's ruthless violence tempered by his sister Valentine's compassion, is exactly what Colonel Graf has been searching for. Ender is recruited to Battle School, a space station where children train for interstellar warfare, told he was born to save humanity from the Buggers, an insectoid alien species that nearly destroyed Earth in previous invasions. From his first shuttle ride, Ender's isolation is engineered. Colonel Graf publicly praises him as the only recruit who understands zero-gravity thinking, immediately alienating him from peers. When Ender breaks a boy's arm in self-defense, Graf weaponizes it. "I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to produce the best soldiers in the world." The pattern repeats with surgical precision. Just as Ender forms connections, he's transferred. His deepest friendship with Ally, sealed with the whispered word Salam, becomes another casualty when they're placed in competing armies. When he creates an unauthorized practice group, new rules prevent cross-army cooperation. This strategy exploits fundamental human needs. By systematically denying Ender normal relationships, they force him to develop extraordinary self-reliance and pattern recognition. The cost is staggering. Ender becomes a commander who brilliantly anticipates enemy movements while losing touch with his own humanity, a child who understands warfare better than connection. The enemy's gate is down. This simple reorientation becomes Ender's mantra in the battle room, the zero-gravity combat simulator where children wage mock warfare. While others cling to Earth-based concepts of up and down, Ender grasps that perspective is everything. In zero gravity, the only direction that matters is toward your objective. Given command of Dragon Army, historically associated with failure, Ender abandons tradition entirely. He creates 5 tunes instead of 4, trains for independent action rather than mass movements, and develops the feet-first attack position that minimizes target area. Dragon Army wins battle after battle, even when teachers manipulate conditions, facing multiple armies simultaneously, fighting exhausted, entering with frozen soldiers. His innovations work because they reject the assumption that space combat should resemble Earth warfare. As Dragon Army's victories mount, Ender realizes he's using Graf's tactics on Bean, criticizing him publicly, creating distance, forging a better soldier through isolation. The realization disgusts him, yet he continues because it works. The breaking point comes when Bonzo Madrid, humiliated by defeats, corners Ender in the shower with 6 accomplices. Naked and outnumbered, Ender fights with calculated brutality, delivering a devastating kick that leaves Bonzo unconscious. Only later does Ender learn the truth. Both Bonzo and Stilson died from their injuries. He has killed twice before his 11th birthday, both times in self-defense, both times using precisely calculated force designed to prevent all future fights. "I didn't want to hurt him," he cries, yet part of him knew, calculated, chose. The weapon Graf has been forging is complete, but the boy inside it is dying. At Command School, Ender endures brutal battle simulations under Maza Rackham, hero of the Second Invasion. Each scenario forces impossible choices about sacrificing crews as he commands fleets against overwhelming odds. In the final test, designed for failure, Ender abandons conventional tactics. With his fleet nearly destroyed, he targets the bugger homeworld with the Little Doctor, a weapon that disrupts molecular bonds. The planet explodes, destroying the entire enemy fleet. The room erupts in celebration. Then, Mazer reveals the truth. There were no games. The battles were real. For months, Ender commanded actual human fleets through Ansible communication. Every simulation was real. Every sacrificed ship contained real crews. The final test was the Third Invasion. He just destroyed the bugger homeworld and committed xenocide. Ender collapses. The deception was necessary. They needed someone with enough empathy to understand the enemy, but who wouldn't hesitate knowing the stakes. Earth is saved, but the child who saved them is shattered. Years pass. Ender cannot return to Earth. He's too valuable, too dangerous, too broken. As governor of the first human colony on a former bugger world, he discovers something impossible. The giant's corpse from his battle school mind game recreated in physical reality. Inside, he finds a queen bugger's cocoon, the last hope of their species. Through telepathic connection, he experiences her memories and understands the tragedy. The buggers were a hive mind. Individual drones weren't sentient, merely extensions of their queen's consciousness. When they first encountered humans, they didn't understand that each human was individually sentient. Killing humans seemed like pruning branches, not murder. By the time they realized their mistake, humanity had committed to their extinction. The buggers had found Ender through the Ansible, learning about him through his dreams while he unknowingly destroyed them. They built this landscape to show they understood their mistake and sought forgiveness. Ender writes the Hive Queen's story, hiding no truth. He signs it Speaker for the Dead. The book spreads across human colonies, inspiring a movement where speakers tell complete truths about the dead, hiding no faults, pretending no virtues. The novel ends with Ender and Valentine traveling from world to world, carrying the Queen's cocoon, searching for a world where she can awaken safely. His quest to resurrect the species he destroyed becomes his atonement. In the moment when I truly understand my enemy, understand him well enough to defeat him, then in that very moment, I also love him. This is Ender's terrible gift, the ability to see so completely from another's perspective that victory becomes inseparable from empathy. We live in a world that increasingly demands we see others as enemies, rewarding quick judgments and punishing nuanced understanding. We train children for competition, celebrate their victories, and rarely ask what we sacrifice when we turn them into weapons. The qualities that make someone a brilliant strategist, seeing patterns, anticipating reactions, exploiting weaknesses, are inseparable from the capacity for devastating empathy. The most powerful weapon isn't the gun or bomb, but the mind that can see from every angle. Ender saves humanity not despite his empathy, but because of it. He anticipates every move and understands every fear. The cost is living forever with that understanding, knowing exactly what he destroyed and why they deserve to live. Ender's story suggests true strength requires both power and compassion, and the burden may be heavier than any weapon.